coming up on this episode of the MD and Chef Team Show.
So we're at Second Baby. He has said, no, I'm sober. I'm thinking he's sober, but I'm not really paying attention. I'm just making sure that I'm getting my needs met and making sure that you're doing what you need to do. And I married somebody who is a very handsome, talented, capable, intelligent person, but while under the influence was very manipulatable, right? So I needed to be safe. I need to control you to be safe. So I'm going to manipulate you into what I want. That works until it doesn't work anymore.
Welcome to the show from the MD and Chef team. I'm Dr. Isabel, medical doctor here at the MD and Chef team. And who are you?
And I'm Chef Michael, culinary nutrition expert. I'm the chef part of the team.
And what are we going to talk about, babe? Now, I can say that because he's my husband.
Yes. Well, then we'll be talking about marriage, relationships, parenting, intimacy.
Ooh.
We'll talk about mindsets of success, overcoming depression, anxiety. I'll be getting into functional nutrition, recipes and tips from the kitchen. And we're going to both get into how to live a long, healthy, vibrant life.
Yes, I love it. Our mission is to help you prevent and reverse disease and give you hope in the process. Oh, yeah, we like to have fun, too. So let's get on with the show. Hi, everyone. It's me, your Dr. Isabel. Welcome to the MD and Chef team. And today I am so excited because I get to introduce to you Tanya Joya. She is living in Steamboat Springs, Colorado, which I'm from Colorado. I did all my medical training and I just love talking to her because here I am in New Zealand and she's in America and we're just uniting together as a united force. I'm going to go ahead and introduce a little bit about her and then we'll ask her about her story and away we go. Tanya knows that for every addict, five people are impacted. Working with women heals a generation. I love that. Because if you get the woman right, because the woman, you know, loves throughout the whole family, you know, and that just infects everybody else. So I love that. Working with women heals a generation. She's been through all the challenges you're familiar with. Striving for a career to make her whole. Chasing a man to fulfill her. Jumping unhealed into a second marriage. Managing new babies. An addicted husband, as well as her own codependency, running her own business, thinking enough money would, quote, save her. Oh, what a lie, huh?
Absolutely.
What a lie. And finally, Tanya decided she deserved more in her life and from her life. She set out to learn everything. AA, Al-Anon, Celebrate Recovery, and Deep Therapy with the EMDR. And decided to help heal others who share similar challenges by getting her professional coaching certification. Congratulations for that.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Tanya works with women who want to finally heal their marriage and family whilst supporting their husbands through recovery from addiction. She uses her unique Dancing with Joy process to help them become the woman her husband cherishes and the mother that places God and love first to create a truly connected, loving, and supportive family. Welcome, Tanya.
Thank you so much, Isabel. I really appreciate the opportunity to share what has come hard won to me, and hopefully I can help co-create with someone else in easier steps.
Yes, yes. And you know what? Sometimes, just like we were talking before we started and pressed the record button, sometimes people just aren't ready. And you come to yourself and you're like, that's it. I've had enough and I want a better life.
Yes.
Can you tell us your whole story? Don't be short. We're not on any time frame. Okay. Can you tell us what's going on? What happened and where are you now?
Yeah. If we couch this in the idea around addiction, I didn't know that I was struggling with relationship addiction. And when I look back over it, I can see it. And I can see that from an early age, I was looking for outside things to fill me up instead of looking to God to fill me up. Now, I was raised in a Christian home. We went to church. I did, you know, Bible studies, all those types of things. But, and this will thread through the story, I'm the righteous older brother. I'm the one that never gets it. I'm the one that, you know, the father is able to love on the prodigal. He's able to bring the prodigal back in. But the righteous older brother says, where's my stuff? I've been doing what you told me to do. Where's my stuff? So I won my approval by performance love, by, you know, getting degrees, by going to work, by getting the job, by doing all those things. And just like an addict, I did those things and did those things and did those things until they didn't work anymore. And that's what happened with my first marriage, is I kept pushing and I kept accomplishing and I kept saying, could you just, this needs to happen. These things need to take place. And eventually we got to a point where we just didn't see eye to eye anymore, didn't have values anymore, didn't have any connection anymore, because I was not looking at trying to make things go right. I was looking at, how do I get him to fill my needs completely? Which, as we know, my background is Christianity.
And there's mine too.
There's no human that can do that.
No
human is ever going to do that. They're going to fail. I'm going to fail. My children are going to fail. You know, none of that is going to fill me. I still didn't get it. And I got, therapy is like my second home. I've had plenty of therapists, and I always advise people, I'm like, remember, you hired them. They didn't hire you. So if it is not working for you, find the right person for you. And I've had some great people in my life, did that, and then hopped off from a very good job where I was running a mediation arbitration program in Southwest Georgia, had a lot of responsibility, and I just said no more. And I left and I packed up and I went to a guest ranch. Now, I show up at the guest ranch with a boyfriend. He drove me out there. The man who will soon be my husband comes to the window and says, oh, where are you going? Who are you? What are you doing on the guest ranch? And he says he knew then that we were going to get married. I'm still total muddle all over the place. In doing that, I don't know if any of you know about being in a situation where you work and live in the same place, but we called it as the ranch turns. You get very involved very quickly with people who are available, and some people do it with multiple people. We became an item. We started to date. We did all the things in setting up the relationship that you're not supposed to do in a Christian relationship. I was extremely broken at the time. And he has his own story to tell. So I'm gonna tell my half of it. I didn't really understand about drug use or alcohol. It just wasn't really part of my world that I thought. Now, it had been more part than I realized as I began to look back over it. So we began to move towards marriage. We got married. Things were going well. We had our first baby. We had a second baby. And when we got married, he said, yes, absolutely, I'm going to be sober. What we didn't count on was that Tanya wasn't sober. Not one little iota at all. I was controlling.
What was he going to be sober from?
His lifetime use was marijuana. And then that transitioned into alcohol when it wasn't working anymore.
Okay.
For me, I am both a people pleaser and a very controlling person, because I need to take control of you so that I can be safe. If you're not happy, I'm not happy.
You're not alone. A lot of women, I see that happening, is you've got to control so that you know what's happening. So this is going to speak to so many people.
Absolutely. And even though I did what I thought was, it was 5 years between marriages. So I did what I thought I needed to do the work to heal. There were things I didn't know, and they weren't presented to me until a lot later. So we're at second baby. He said, no, I'm sober. I'm thinking he's sober, but I'm not really paying attention. I'm just making sure that I'm getting my needs met and making sure that you're doing what you need to do. And I married somebody who is a very handsome, talented, capable, intelligent person, but while under the influence was very manipulatable, right? So I needed to be safe. I need to control you to be safe. So I'm going to manipulate you into what I want. That works until it doesn't work anymore. Just like any other abuse issue, which substance abuse or, you know, relationship abuse or those types of things, people don't think of it that way. They always think of very physical, violent type things. That wasn't it. I'm like, no, you don't get thoughts. I get thoughts. We're going to do things the way that I want to do it. And as long as you stay in this line, we're going to be okay. So baby comes. Yeah. I mean, think about it.
Oh, I have thought about it. I have lived that.
And I don't look like like you're in a way I do, but I don't look like, you know, I have a master's degree. I'm highly educated. I'm well-spoken. I'm all those things. But man, you get in that space, I'm going to come unglued like a 3-year-old. And where is my emotional maturity here? So baby comes along. He is much prayed for, much wanted. We are highly blessed to have him. I'm 35 at this time. So I've traded energy for wisdom. Right? He comes along, absolutely adore him. He's fabulous. We are fighting like cats and dogs. Because now we've got somebody else to support. We've got to figure out some other things. It's not just us doing our things anymore. And that baby laughed all the time. Now, if you're astute at all, he's laughing to break the tension, because what are we? We're his survival mechanism, right? If somehow he doesn't break this tension, he might die. That's where it really began to come home to me after I studied this with the Gabor Mate, with his understanding of addiction and attachment. He did this to protect himself, right? Because his parents were nuts. Let's just put it where it was. We were not handling life well. So as I look back over that, I'm thinking, how am I connecting here when I can't even connect to myself, when myself is just all over the place because I am looking to the outside to fix me? So let's fast forward to we're building a house and having a second baby at the same time. And my beautiful, wonderful husband is GCing the house. He's taking care of everything on nights and weekends. He is exhausted. I've got a baby on the way. I've got one on the ground. It's very, very busy.
What does GCing the home mean?
General contractor. So we didn't hire a general contractor. He was doing all of that work, which is just a whole nother job, right? So we move off of the cocoon that the ranch was. I mean, we got meals there. We got housing. We didn't have to pay for anything. We move off of that cocoon into our own house and it just gets worse. So he's not coming home. I'm calling everybody. I'm asking. I'm doing all this. My crazy behavior just gets crazier. And here's the thing. We had been in Al-Anon and AA by that time for the last 7-8 years. I mean, we had been working through the process. I had a sponsor. He had a sponsor. We had been doing those things. We went to church. We did that. If you saw us, we look like every other family. We're fine. Everything's fine. It's okay. Well, that's about the time that the medical marijuana card got introduced. So this became something where he could bring home pot plant. This was no longer undercover, under the table, secret stuff anymore. And that elevated it. So we're out on 20 acres. I'm 22 miles from town. I have two babies. And if you have two babies and you try and keep a nap schedule, you're not going anywhere.
No.
We are accumulating chickens, Isabel. We're accumulating chickens, okay? So my husband decides that he wants to be a chicken farmer in Colorado. Like, who's the guy who did the big food book? I had it on the tip of my tongue. Anyway, he wants to be a chicken farmer. So we get, you know, my 3-year-old is all excited. You go to the post office, you get this box of chickens. The little chicks are going, beep, beep, beep. Everybody's having a great time. This is a new thing. Maybe this is a side hustle that's going to bring us, you know, income, all those types of things. Then it gets to 100 chickens and then 200 chickens and then 300 chickens and then 400 chickens.
Oh my
God. It is just chicken everywhere I step outside. There are chickens. And what we're doing is we're supplying a 5-star resort with eggs so that they can make homemade ice cream. So there's some fluidity to it. And we do begin to make a little bit of money. And we both still have jobs, but we do begin to make a little bit of money. And things are kind of falling in place. But what I didn't know was I knew I was feeling tenser and tenser and my heart was getting harder and harder and I was getting angrier and angrier to the point where I have my almost year old in a swing seat, in the swing seat at our house. The other one is on the ground and a rooster comes at my probably 5-year-old at that point. I don't think about it. I take a shovel and I am whacking that rooster. I'm grabbing the kids. I'm running inside. I'm calling my husband going, he has to die. He has to die right now. And I need you to come home and take care of it. That's how intense I was at that point. Yeah. Now, anybody who knows roosters, yes, they can be dangerous, but that was kind of an over the top reaction to
what I agree with you. You are correct.
On.
Yes.
I'm like, ooh, Tiny's a little crazy. So as we're working through this process, new house, new babies, we've got responsibilities. I'm working part-time. He's working full-time. We're raising these chickens. We're doing all this stuff. It just really began to disintegrate to where, man, if we were talking to each other, we were yelling or we weren't talking at all. And I'll just be real vulnerable about the shameful piece about this. You know, somebody needed to stay with the kids. We couldn't just walk off. So anytime he was home, I'm like, I'm out of here. I'm going to my job. I'm going to be with friends. I'm going to do that, which is not uncommon with little kids. You need some time out. But we were to leave. I mean, it was that bad. So there are a dozen other stories. There's all kinds of other things going on, but we had a total breakdown after a Christmas party. And here's my thinking. He had been working at a bar. We went to a bar. There was a lot of drinking. I just didn't think it through. The kids were with a friend. And when I go to pick them up, I'm already crying. And the friends say, just stay here with us. It'll be okay. I'm like, no. If I just get them to bed and I go to bed, everything will be all right in the morning. It wasn't. It got worse that night. It got worse and it got worse and it got worse to where for the first time in my life, I actually reached out and said, I need help. Now, I've described a little bit about how bad it was to begin with. And I was as much of a, you know, let's be real honest. I was as much of an instigator and if not crazier than he was, because I was so angry, so wounded, so hurt. Not necessarily by him, but by where was my life? What was I doing? How was I here? Who was I? Had I lost myself completely? So I reached out for help. Again, we're in the Colorado mountains. Nobody heard me. So we eventually both went to bed. And then in the morning.
Wait. What do you mean what do you mean nobody heard you?
We didn't have service at my house. So I sent a text to my best girlfriend. She didn't get it till the next morning.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So I had a sponsor at that point in time. And what she said to me is, Tanya, you really need to think about it because things can escalate quicker than you think. Now, my husband is a very gentle man. He's a very loving man. But when everything begins to degenerate and you've got somebody who's a fighter, the one thing I did differently that night was I surrendered to God. I laid and prayed, said the Our Father a dozen times, prayed over my kids, all of that kind of stuff. And just the story is pretty horrendous. So I won't go into all details. The next morning, he still was not sober. And so I called my sponsor and I said, I need help. I can't get out of here right now. If I can leave, but he won't let me take the kids. So that, I mean, any woman with a 3 and 5 year old knows you can't leave, you know. You're there. Right. So my girlfriend comes over, she packs us up and we leave. And if anybody knows anything about domestic violence, which is what this is called, the police are called and she called the police at that point in time. If the police are called, one of you is going to jail. And the police said, which one of you is going to jail? And he, like the honorable man that he is, said, it's me. I'm going. So that brought us into cops, courts and chickens. Right.
Was that the first time that there was physical domestic violence?
So there was no physical domestic violence.
Oh.
So let's get it where it is.
So why does he have to go to jail?
So what was happening was, here, you'll have to clarify it in your own state and in your own country. Domestic violence is impediment. It can be verbal abuse and it can be restriction of another person's movement. And like I said, I was not restricted, but he would have challenged me had I gotten the kid. So I couldn't leave. So you'll have to check with your country and your state on what that looks like. And again, here's my belief. The courts are no place to handle family struggles because they just don't have a setup for that.
No, they're not prepared.
No. And when we got that involved, they took over our lives. Completely took over our lives. Now, there's a lot of things I'm thankful for. We had a 3-month restraining order of texting only about the kids, and the kids had to be transferred under supervision. Again, my husband is not dangerous. He is a kind and loving man. He got sober that night. Boom, cold turkey. Did all the things he needed to do. I needed to do the things that I needed to do. This is where I'm talking about the righteous older brother not getting it. I was as much of an instigator as he was because I was just that sick. So that 3 months of quiet allowed us to screw our heads back on straight. And then
I only laugh because I get you.
You know, we needed that kind of time and self-reflection and reaching out to other people. You know, my story is mild compared to the stories I've heard. Mm-hmm. It's reaching out to other people who've had in-depth stories. And Jeff Van Vonderen, who is not doing a whole lot of work anymore, but he has a series called Wounded by Shame, Healed by Grace, which is one of the best Christian series on explaining that. You can look him up on that. But what he talks about is, look, the addict didn't come from nowhere. The family unit is supporting this for its own reasons. And I explained some of those when we started talking, for its own reasons. Mm-hmm. And then when it gets too much for everybody is when the implosion is going to happen. So the implosion we'd been headed that way for probably at least 2 years, if not longer. And nobody, neither he nor I, was willing to slow down in our own particular isms to do what needed to be done about it, to get really honest with ourselves. So this implosion happened and we had those quiets. That's God talking. I'm sorry. That is God talking.
Don't be sorry. That is the truth.
And so amen to that. That is God talking and saying, look, this is an opportunity for the two of you to stop playing at marriage, stop being a two-legged stool. Remember, we had the face. We looked like everything was okay. We went to church, we went to program, but we were still doing a two-legged stool. We were not really committed to the one and only person who could save and resurrect this marriage. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So fast forward 23 months, we both do the work we need to do. We can't counsel together for a year because that's how the state of Colorado sets that up. I had moved out of the house. We had gotten rid of the chickens. I had moved the horses someplace else. We only had one dog by that time. I'd moved into a rental in town. I only had a part-time job. And if you've run through the court system at all, everybody is expected to support the family. Whatever you're doing, you suddenly need a 40-hour-a-week job. And it's all split all down that way. So we had a lot of support, a lot of community. We'd been there for a while. I had very gracious people. He had gracious people who helped and took care of the kids and supported us. We had a church that loved on us. You know, once they knew, here's the thing about finding community, right? The church didn't know. They didn't know what was going on. Once they knew what was going on, they were like, let us love on you. Let us help you. Let us figure this out with you. We want both of you here. How do we figure that out?
But the shame kept you quiet and hidden. And the devil loves that.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, that you just feel guilty and shameful and can't tell anybody. Uh-uh. But once the light gets turned on, then everybody comes and helps you out.
Yes, they actually do. So I want to tell that to anybody who is struggling right now. Now, let's be clear, Isabel, there are some churches that would not work with
us. I know.
But we have chosen churches where Celebrate Recovery is already active. With our home church, we got to help start a Celebrate Recovery program. And Celebrate Recovery is a 12-step Christian program that uses the 12 steps from Al-Anon and AA and adds in scripture and the 8 principles with it. And the one thing I like about them is you don't stand up and say, hi, I'm Tanya, a relationship addict. You stand up and say, I'm Tanya, and I struggle with relationships, depression, rage, anger. I am not identified by that. That right. just happens to be something that's going on.
How would you like to feel a sense of clarity, focus, and mental sharpness that enables you to tackle any challenge with ease? Can you envision experiencing a better memory and recall, allowing you to easily remember important details, names, and events? What could you accomplish if your mental energy is always high, allowing you to stay alert and productive throughout the day without feeling mentally fatigued or foggy? How great would it feel when you experience better quality sleep, allowing your brain to rest and recharge, leading to increased productivity and creativity? Imagine feeling a sense of calmness and control, allowing you to manage stress and anxiety with ease, giving you the confidence to handle any situation. Be honest with yourself. When was the last time you experienced an overall sense of well-being and satisfaction? You see, your brain health positively impacts all areas of your life, from work to relationships and personal growth. Just visualize how amazing it would feel to have optimal brain health and unlock your full potential. If you want to learn more, and I know you do, then check out the link in the show notes for the Optimizing Your Brain Health community. And we look forward to seeing you there. And now, back to the rest of the show.
We actually got remarried.
Aww.
By the pastor. And we invited just a couple people to witness it. Because I said, this is, you know how your first marriage, I've been married three times now, twice to the same man. Your first marriage is really about your parents' friends, all those people who have supported them and those types of things. I said, no, this is not about that. This is about our commitment to each other. This isn't about anybody else but you, me, and God. And we'd like a few people there to witness that. So it was a very sacred ceremony. And then we started on the next phase of our journey. Because what I tell people is, you know, everybody gets excited about the wedding, right? So we get excited about sobriety. And we're like, woohoo, he's sober. That just means you get to deal with the real life problems. You get to deal with the other issues. And so in that process, I had to begin to deal with my own issues. And the real trigger came for me about 8 years later when my 13-year-old and I were just at it again, like I had been with my husband. So who was the really unhealed person? When your child's therapist comes to you and says, it is not safe in your house for him to do the deep work that he needs to do. It is like, And I said, pick me. I'm the one. And in doing that deep work, I came into a place where, like, it's Moses who says to God, he says, if you're not going, we're not going.
Yeah.
So I don't really care about the land of milk and honey if you're not going to be there with us.
That's right.
And that's the place that I came to was, okay, God, I'm surrendering my children as the idols that I've made them. I'm surrendering my marriage as the idol that I've made it. I'm surrendering this need for whatever material goods. And I'm going to step into what you provide me because I've tried everything else and I can't handle it. I have to lay it down.
So, good,
so God is kind enough, generous enough, gentle enough to say, okay, we learned this lesson over here. And I think that's all you can manage right now. And then we're going to learn this next step. So In that surrender process, it has been where I said, hey, God, if this is your will, let me step in and provide the space for other women to work through this in a no shame, no blame, no judgment atmosphere. Mm-hmm. You know, if you decide that this is the best way for you to live, then that's the best way for you to live. It's between you and God on how you do that. Because a lot of people looked at me and said, this is full stop, Tanya. You need a divorce. I'm like, no, that is not what I'm being called to do.
I always tell people, Michael and I have been married. The first 14 years was common law marriage, but then we have been married, you know, officially Christian marriage. So we've been married for 43 years. I have to be honest with everybody here. Being married, really, you're just learning how to do this, you know? And it's only, and I'm putting my hands together as a fit, you know, united. It's only after 30 years that you're like this. 30 years. And everybody thinks that it needs to be like this right away. It doesn't happen that way. No. That is a lie. You have to work at it. You have to learn. Sometimes you're like this. Sometimes you're like that. But sooner or later, you learn how to put both the fingers in together and do this. And that does happen, but it doesn't happen instantly.
No.
It's a lot of work. A lot of work.
And where we broke down is where most couples do. The 7 to 11s are very hard years. And that's where we broke down. And we'll be 20 next month.
Good. So, congratulations.
Well, thank you. And, you know, we've got a child leaving the nest. That's causing some ripples because it's changing the dynamic of the family and how that's going to look. So we're riding through that too. What I encourage people is, yes, sobriety needs to happen for both of you, both the prodigal and the righteous older brother, and you will flip-flop. That's the interesting thing about marriage. You know, you will be the prodigal and they will be the righteous older brother. Sometimes they won't get it and you will. it is not going to take away everything. If you have a great wedding ceremony, it doesn't mean the next 50 years of your life are going to be smooth. Neither does getting sober. Most couples divorce in the sobriety process because they don't know who they are and they've never bothered to find out. And I can tell you from my experience, I didn't marry Jerry because I was completely healthy. I needed this kind of trauma bonding that we did for my purposes of, as I've said before, controlling my life.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Thank you so much for sharing that. I just think of the baby that was smiling and laughing just to keep everybody at peace and protecting itself. That was totally me. I was the one making everybody happy. And if I could make everybody happy in my family, then everything was safe. And if I wasn't making everybody happy, then I had failed, you know?
So
that's huge. So how's your baby now? Is that baby smiling all the time or is that baby healed?
He is 18. He's an all-star football player, graduated with a 3.0, headed off to welding school. He's doing really well. Are there some emotional issues still tucked in there? Yes. What we need to do at this point is back off and let him handle them and be there
with God.
Support. With God and be there to support when he's ready to deal with it. Now, here's the thing that I was talking with somebody else about is we took them on this journey. We didn't hide this journey. We went to the Betty Ford Children's Program, which I highly recommend, when they were 3 and 5. We did it again when my husband was able to join us later. And we did that as a family, a very healing experience. They went to Celebrate Recovery with us because it's a family program. You come, you have dinner. There's the children's place or the landing for the kids while the adults are doing their thing, you know, doing worship. They went through this process with us. We still talk about it. Now they're a little tired of it at this point, but, you know, hopefully we have held the space that says, if this becomes a part of your life, you know where to come. If it is a relationship issue, you know where to come and we're open to talk about it. If it's a substance use issue, you know where to come. If it's I've bankrupted myself, you know where to come. Mm-hmm. That we are those people and we've shown you our failures and it's okay for you to fail too. You're going to learn.
And that it's okay to realize that you don't want to be Lot's wife. You know, no. You don't want to keep on looking back because if you keep on looking back, that's going to stop you from moving forward and up with God in everything that he's got. So the encouragement here is, we've all been a mess. And the devil really wants us to remember that mess over and over again and to believe that there's no way you can become a better you. But we've got to remember God. You know, there's like, I don't know how many women there are in the Bible, but there's more than 100. And God says, and remember Lot's wife. He doesn't even say her name. It's Lot's wife and what ended up with her. That's a big journey for people to realize your future has no room for your past. It's time to just let go of that and move forward. So where are you on that journey? Do you constantly look back and feel guilty or have those chains been broken?
Those chains have been broken. Now, like anyone, I can mess up. My tongue is very sharp. And I can say things that I will regret later. I learned from my father to come back and apologize. That was a key learning experience. And biblically, if you go to the women in the Bible, Rahab is a prostitute. She's in the line of Jesus. You know, we have woman after Tamar in the line of Jesus tricks her father-in-law, who won't give her his other son to marry, into impregnating her. And she has a baby from that. And he's in the line. We have women after women after women who fall from grace completely. And God says, I've got you. I have made you whole. It's not anybody else. You are creative, resourceful, and whole because I made you that way. So when I fall, here's what it is. It's a lot easier for me to come right back and say, I am sorry. I screwed that up. What do you need me to do to help make this whole again and to turn inside and say, God, where do I need to turn? Where do I need to repent? How do I need to make changes? Because just like we said earlier, I'm never going to fulfill everything that Jerry wants. I'm never going to fulfill everything for the boys. I'm just not capable of that. So that's also self-forgiveness. And so leaving that in the past has become easier and easier. And that through all the work, how I'm able to hold space for other people and say, yeah, That hurts. Yeah, that's hard. Or, hey, did you see how you handle that better than you did the last time? And that was your goal, was to handle this so that when they're all late for dinner or they're not showing up, you're not snapping and controlling and getting ready to fling dishes. To recognize those 1% iterations that we're making, I think, is our biggest step. And then to turn and self-forgive. That's where we get stuck, is when we don't self-forgive. And then when we're not ready or willing to have God shine that light and say, hey, you know what? You're a prodigal too. Nobody can get there by the law. Nobody can get there by keeping everything in order.
I just love God's love.
Amen.
You know, like, gosh, if only everybody would understand how much he loves each and every one of us. But like you and I were talking about before we started recording, is everybody comes to themselves at their time, you know, and the best thing, like, I've got a friend who has just gotten his fourth DUI, and he's a professional, he's a medical doctor, and he's lost his license. And this isn't his first rodeo with that. I've tried everything I can to help him. And now I'm just, God has said to me, you don't call, you don't text, you just pray for him. I'll do the rest. And that's a really powerful position that people who believe in God can have, that just praying for people and saying, God, go get them.
Yes, yes.
Because it takes the pressure off of us. Like, we're not responsible for their healing. That's God's job. All we can, what we can do, the most powerful thing, is just believe that God's power and love can heal them. And we can pray into that.
Absolutely. And for wives, I would say getting out of the way.
Yeah.
For years, I was teaching, preaching, nagging, scolding, all of those things, like I was his savior. Like, yep. I knew better than he did. Mm-hmm. And that's where God said, that's got to stop. Mm-hmm. That's absolutely got to stop.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I was the same way. I still am being moved by the Holy Spirit that says, don't do that. Stop doing that. Just let me deal with it. And so all I have to do is just pray. Please.
Well, and think about it. There have been times in my life that I've been corrected. Is that really going to be very functional for me? Or is it better for me to come to my own conclusions that this behavior is killing me or killing something I love or a relationship I love? If somebody comes in and just corrects me and I don't process it, it doesn't go anywhere but the surface. Mm-hmm. That's where I really like Gabor Mate's definition of addiction, is anything that you are doing to move away from pain, gain pleasure that in the long term is destructive. So it doesn't have to be substance. And what he says is, we've come to believe this, the addictive behaviors are the solution that you are finding right now to the pain that you're in. Now, there may be long-term consequences that go with that. I mean, take something as simple as food. Food makes you feel loved, makes you feel cared about, hits all those endorphins and the dopamine and all that stuff. And you're like, boom, 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 boom. But there are long-term repercussions. I mean, I'm sure you work with clients all the time about that. So when I look at this and help women understand, look, it's the pain underneath that you need to be looking at, not the solution that he is choosing. It's what is the pain underneath. Not that you can solve it, but to see him as a real person who has hopes and dreams and joys and pains, that this is not about you. Mm-mm. This is about him sorting out what the pain is and how can you invite him to change rather than, you know, I've done everything from shoot guns off in the backyard.
Wow, girl. You're a real cowgirl.
It got bad. Yeah, it got bad. You know, rather than the nag and preach and teach. And I even said to him, oh, this gets really bad. This is heretical. I looked at him one day. I said, Jesus is coming for you. I know it. Jesus is coming for you. Who am I?
I know.
To throw the book like that, you know, that's not how Jesus works.
No, it's not. It's not.
And that's just ugly.
It is ugly. It's very law. It's very, you know, that's what the Pharisees and the Sadducees and all those things that Apostle Paul was like so against. Jesus was against the law, you know, absolutely. And the law is not love. And Jesus's way is love. So I get you, girl. I'm there. I've been there. I'm not even going to start that because, you know, that's not what we're here for. Now, I wanted to ask you, as we're landing this plane, what action steps would you be able to offer our listeners today so that they can start beginning to win today?
Okay. So I love this question. I have four questions, and these are great journal questions for you to put in your journal. And the first one starts with what matters? What matters? And don't make this I have to think about it for 18 years question. Just jot it out. What matters? What is most important to you? And if you need any clues, go to your calendar and your checkbook. Your calendar, where you spend your time, and your checkbook, where you spend your money, is going to tell you what matters to you. So if those are not the things that matter to you, here's your opportunity to change it. If you are spending all your time out shopping or all your time out, with girlfriends and not taking care of your family, this is your opportunity to change it. Dr. DeMartini has a really good values statement that if you say, I really value my family, but you're spending 12 hours, 6 days a week at work, it'll show up and you can change that. You can move that around. So what matters is your key thing. Where are you spending your time, your money, your energy? Then it's what's happening. So take stock, take honest stock of what's happening. Are you having dinner together? Are you nagging all the time? Are you angry all the time? Are you stonewalling? Are you shutting down all the time? Take stock of what's happening with you. We're not looking at the other. We're looking, look at me with the mean girl finger. we're not looking at the other. We're looking at you. So what matters? What's happening? Then the third question is what's needed? So what changes can you make? Let's look at the controllables and the uncontrollables. And I'm going to tell you right now, you're not going to change him, period. You can change you. And anytime one person in the system changes. So do you need more self-care? Do you need more to balance your emotions, meditate, go to the gym, take care of yourself a little bit better? Because normally we're doing everything for everybody. Mm-hmm. And then we're just cranky, mean people. Mm-hmm. And then the last question is, what's next? How are you going to put this in action? So I suggest to the folks that I work with, take three things, no more than three things, and make small things. So just recently, my men were complaining that every time I came in like, do this, take care of that. I need this done. All those types of things. And this is at dinner time when we're trying to settle in and all those types of things. I need you to pick this up off the floor. Why can't you do that? Did you do this? So I made a setup so that I walked in and just sat down and didn't say anything. Because what they needed was not for me to come in like a cold blast of winter, but for me to come in and adjust to the temperature in the room, see where everybody was. Nobody was nagging at me. I was blowing up the scene. It changed the total dynamic. We began to have peaceful meals. Now, it took a lot for me not to get frustrated about stuff all over the table and your football bags dropped in the middle of the living room. But you know what? At 16 and 18, I've got so few years left with them under my roof. One's already going to be gone. What did I want? What really mattered? Connecting with them. What was happening? I was blowing up the situation. What was needed? Me to back off and regulate myself. I was the one who was being dysregulated, not them. And then what was next? To try it as a small experiment. Didn't cost me anything. I wasn't going to lose my job over it. Nobody was going to get upset if I came in and just sat down and got quiet. So that's how those four questions can play out in an experiment scenario.
Wow. Thank you so much. That was very, very good. And it's so amazing that still, you're still learning how to not try to control the situation. I mean, you're so much more aware of, okay, I'm doing this, and I'm not going to do this anymore. I can stop myself. I did want to add that we can change ourselves with God.
But we can't change somebody else.
We cannot change anybody. But I have come to understand that we can't change somebody else and we can't change ourselves without the help of God. And Amen. We can change somebody else by loving on them and allowing them their space for their journey, for their growth, for their healing, Because everybody gets healed at a different rate.
And it's amazing when you stop pushing, shoving, demanding, nagging, preaching, teaching, and you give them a little bit of space. So if I may, it's the I, it versus I, thou. So if I am seeing you as a person with hopes and dreams and sadness and anger and pain, just like me, then you and I are both humans and I'm going to treat you like that. When I treat you like an it, like an object that I manipulate for my use, Then I'm going to dehumanize you. And then I can say to you, well, you need to be doing this. And if I were you, you need to do that and nag and preach and teach.
Very good. Very good. Hey, where can everybody find you?
So you can find me over at TanyaGioia.com, which is TanyaGioia.com. And then Rise Above Addiction Facebook group. We'd love to have you in a Facebook group. I do live trainings each week. We also pray for each other. I put silly things in there. People put silly things back in there. Because one of the things I learned in all the rooms and all the recovery programs is laughter is super healing. And yes, we need to cry, but man, we need to laugh just as much. And the best part of becoming humble and surrendering is you begin to laugh at yourself and you're like, no wonder they think I am just really crazy. If I was talking that way out loud, the way I'm talking to myself, yeah, I am crazy. So that mean girl, man, let's laugh at her. Let's bring her into the room. Let's share the joke instead of just that wet noodle beating that we do all the time.
Yeah, very good. Very good. And all that stuff is in the show notes too.
Awesome. Well, I really appreciate that, Isabel. This has been a great conversation.
Thank you so much, Tanya. We will definitely talk again. I feel very connected to you, and we've got so much more to share with everybody.
Even though we're almost 24 hours apart.
Isn't that amazing? It's so amazing. All right. Well, that's a wrap, everybody. Thank you for joining me and Tanya on the MDN Chef team. Please go ahead and share this with other people that you feel would benefit from it. Tanya's had a lot of experience and gosh, she still has like 50 plus more years here on earth. I am prophesying to do more and more of God's work, which I love. So let's do it together. Shall we, Tanya?
Thank you, Isabel. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, everyone. And please remember, remain unstoppable. Mwah. I love you. Bye-bye.
Hello, Chef Michael here. If you enjoyed today's episode, we would love it if you subscribed to the podcast and left us a review.